Good morning. Good morning. So I'm the HR guy, right? So we're going to talk about trust, about the importance of trust. Now, let me ask you a question to begin with. Do you think trust in society and trust in business is improving or declining?
Declining.
Yes, correct. It definitely is. And there are a lot of reasons for it. You know, when you look at what's going on in the world, and we've already heard a little bit from Jan about some of the contextual shifts, but we have a huge number of things going on. I spent a lot of my life, my professional career as a management consultant. I worked for Accenture for many years, so I'm quite used to change in many ways. But I can tell you, I've never seen in my career so much stuff all going on at once, and it really does cover the sort of classic pest model. There's a lot of political change going on. I don't have to tell you about that. And you might be disappointed that I'm not going to talk about Brexit. Jana couldn't talk about Brexit either. She's a civil servant, and I run a charity. So neither of us can talk about things like political subjects on stage. But the reality is the political environment is extremely confused. And most people do not trust political leaders in the way they might have done in the past. Just if you want any evidence of that, just look at how Donald Trump got into the White House. He played on that very idea, and I think it's particularly sad when we hear politicians playing on a similar idea in this country. You know, do we trust Parliament and all those sorts of things? So a lot of change politically, a lot of change economically, which means things are very uncertain. So people get worried about their jobs and security of their jobs and even security of their businesses, and that makes them think about who should I trust? Can I trust my business leaders to look after my interests? We've got social and demographic change going on as well. Younger generations coming into the workforce with different expectations about what business should be doing and what responsible business looks like. And last but not least, as we've already heard, is a huge amount of technological change. Digital disruption is a language which we're now all getting quite familiar with. And it is the combination of all of these things which are really testing many ideas and many ways that we've thought in the past. Even how we work, you know, the growth of jobs in this country, as it is in most economies now, is more about small business, where actually in SMEs, which is 250 employees or less, already employs two-thirds of the workforce, and most of the jobs growth is in that sector. We've got things like the gig economy, contractors. So then people work in those environments, well, who do they trust? Are they even clear about what their terms and conditions are? And if something went wrong, who do they go call? So a lot of change in the world of work, and then a lot of, as I said, demographic change, which of itself is really intriguing. So as I said briefly, a younger generation coming in with different expectations, different demands, but also ways of understanding things because they are so adept at using technology and they are searching stuff all the time. I've got three daughters. They are my own personal social experiment because two of them are Gen Y, so the millennials, and my youngest daughter, who's just 21, is a Gen Z. And the Gen Zers are the first true digital natives. Now, what is another word that people use for Gen Z? How do they describe them?
Millennials.
No, millennials is typically the Gen Y. Snowflakes, yes, absolutely. So, now, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with that terminology, but it speaks to a world where people seem to be less resilient. And also, we talk an awful lot about people living in their own echo chambers, so they're not very good at dealing with contradictory evidence or paradox. Now, that's not just true, incidentally, of the younger generation. One of the questions that had a lot of likes on it was, how do I deal with bosses who don't understand that the world is changing? And the reality is there are many, many people in business who struggle with paradox and uncertainty. And you hear business lobbyists, I mean, the CBI keeps talking about, business needs certainty. And I keep saying, but you won't get it, whether it's Brexit or anything else. As I've already highlighted, there's so many things going on. The reality is that we live in uncertain times and in a very uncertain world, and we have to be able to deal with that. Have you heard of the expression that we live in a VUCA world? Can anybody remember what it stands for? Ambiguous, yes. So volatile, uncertain, chaotic or complex, and ambiguous. Do you know where it came from? Yeah, it did. Yeah, Donald, very good. Donald Rumsfeld, in the big geopolitical changes in the 90s, described the world as VUCA. And that is a word I'm hearing economists use and business leaders use, and that is a reality. And living in an uncertain world means you have to be able to deal with paradox and uncertainty, but you've also got to have clear narrative. You've got to be agile, and you've got to respond, not just hunker down and pretend everything's, you know, just the same as it always was. So those questions, which, as I said, had a lot of likes, I absolutely recognize. You know, many people struggling in a world that is changing very, very fast, and they like to hold on to things that create certainty. So as we've already explored, you know, trust is on the decline. Anybody here from Edelman? Anybody from Edelman? So Edelman is, as you know, one of the big PR agencies. They've been running this trust barometer, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with, for a long time. And what it's been steadily showing is this gap between of trust in what people would describe as the establishment, for which read politicians, business leaders, and everybody else, and the ordinary person. And that the ordinary person, in quotes, is more likely to trust somebody more like themselves. But also, when you look at trust in business, what is it that's driven this concern of trust in business, which has to be a big concern to your profession? Because your profession is about trying to communicate and share and build the right image and understanding of what organizations are really up to. But it is all these sorts of things that people think that businesses are just out there to make money, that businesses have lost sight of their purpose, of their connection to community. You made the point, Joanna, about one of the most important things in GDS is that you represent the communities you're part of. And we in the CIPD are doing a lot of work with civil service HR on this. And there is no doubt at the very highest levels of the civil service, they've called out this idea that the civil service needs to be the most diverse organization in the country because it needs to reflect all of us. And that is an essential element of trust, which I'll touch on a little bit more. So there are all these sorts of questions about is business behaving responsibly? And it is also, therefore, and I think about it outside in, and then I'll start to think about it inside out, is that there is growing demand and ways in which people are thinking about business and what it is that business should be doing. So there's a huge discussion that's been going on for a while now about purpose. What is the purpose of your business? And if people believe and have believed that a lot of businesses seem to just want to make money, regardless of how they make it, then that's the part of the problem. And it is driven, I think, from a guy called Milton Friedman, who was a neoliberal back in the 70s, who said the sole purpose of business is to make money. Now, would you agree with that sentiment in today's world? As the sole purpose? Of course, it is a purpose, but now we're saying, well, hold on, it's not just about making money regardless of anything, and it isn't just about the shareholder as the only stakeholder in a business. What other, it's the financial owner. So what other stakeholders are there in a business? Well, we already touched on one, which is the community. Business is part of community, it's part of society, but it hasn't always acted in that way. It's often seen itself as a part, but it isn't. It's part of community and society. So the communities and society of which business is part of is a stakeholder of business, as are customers, as our suppliers, as indeed is the environment which we're now all talking about so much more. I mean, XR, Extinction Rebellion, is really putting so much more pressure. I mean, the pressure was there, but it's really, really grown. Have you noticed, you know, I subscribe to various things like The Economist and The Week and things like that. Have you noticed, and indeed we've done it, I'm sure CIPR have done it as well, all our journals now go out with recyclable packaging. We've changed our membership card from something that was plastic to something that's recyclable. We've done all that in the last 6 months. Have you noticed that? And I'm sure as part of what you are encouraging companies to do is you really have to demonstrate that you are understanding these stakeholders in the environment, the communities, the customers, the suppliers, but there's one other customer or stakeholder of a business that is as important as any. And what is that? Huh? Yeah, absolutely. The employees. It is interesting also to think that Jack Welch, I don't know if you remember him, but he was vaunted as the most influential leader of the 20th century. He led GE, and he was known as Neutron Jack because he used to do a lot of cost stripping and everything else and had a high, you know, it's my way or the highway, command and control kind of view of the world, which is not what I would subscribe to as 21st century leadership. But nonetheless, he did make a really interesting comment, which is on the face of it, that shareholder value is the dumbest idea in the world because it's focused entirely on an idea that Milton Friedman started with. So now purpose is, a lot of organizations are talking about their purpose. Banks have gone back to talking about their purpose because they've recognized, you know, the global financial crisis was not because we hired bad bankers, it's because we put them in environments where they'd lost, the organization had lost sight of what its real purpose was and what its real values were. And there's a lot of work going on in many organizations to revisit all this stuff, thank goodness. The outside-in stuff is this growing pressure from regulators, from employees' perspective and future, from all the stakeholders of the business, say, what is going on in your business besides what you're telling me about your profit? What else is going on? So we've been working closely with the Financial Reporting Council, and the new corporate codes and stewardship codes are calling out ideas which are much deeper than just compliance to a bunch of rules about how you report your profit numbers. They're calling out ideas of genuinely, do you understand things like the corporate culture? What is the organization saying to you about these things like culture and leadership? Obviously, we've got things like regulatory change demanding more reporting on things like gender pay gap. Do you think gender pay gap has been a good thing as a PR community? Do you think it's been a good thing?
Yes.
Good. I think it's been a very good thing. No, but you can still hear organizations bitch and moan about it. And you know that, you know, working with Government Equalities Office on this stuff, that almost 50% of organizations that are reporting their gender pay gap are just reporting a number and no narrative. What do you think that tells you?
They're hiding
stuff. They're just saying it's a compliance issue. They're just saying, oh, somebody's told me I've got to report this number, so I've reported it. There you are, job done. It gives me no sense and should give us no confidence. Those organizations understand that number, understand why it's important, and have a narrative that can explain it and tell us what they're doing. And these are absolutely elemental areas of trust. So it's interesting to see how ESG, which stands for environmental, social, and governance questions, are being driven by investors more and more. So investors saying, I want to see, when I invest in your business, I want to see more about what you are doing regarding the environment, regarding your governance, regarding all the kind of social and people issues that we've touched on. So this is the outside-in pressure that's growing. And yet we still see organizations saying, well, all right, I'll report that number if I have to, but I'll give you no narrative. I mean, it beggars belief. Companies would never report a financial number and give it no narrative, would they? They wouldn't just say, here's my profit, make of it what you will. And yet that's what they're saying when they just report numbers like these. And these are things that are so important to trust now. As I said, more pressure outside in to say, you need to be more transparent. And I want to see what you're doing. So then you move on and begin to bring it back into the inside out is that we've already agreed that one of the most important stakeholders of business are the employees. Another stat from the 2019 survey from Edelman, Trust Barometer, which I find absolutely fascinating, I use it a lot when I talk to the HR communities, is people are now saying, if you want to trust business most, I want to see that you're treating your employees well, even before your customers. Because we know that if you treat your employees well, you treat them fairly, guess what? They will serve your customers. So whilst we've had this long, long mantra of, oh, customers first, you can see some environments where it's almost been taken to extreme. It's only about the customer and damn the consequences of the employee. And you need to just work harder to deliver what the customer needs. And you can see that going on. You know, I don't know if some of you work in the health service, slightly different context, but in there, you know, I was talking to a whole group of HR directors in the NHS recently. I said, this one here, you've got to understand, because this is about who's caring for the carers. If you care for the nurses and doctors, then they will care for the patients. And you look at many environments, not all of the environments in the NHS, but too many, where you realize that things like the morale, the bullying and harassment, all these other things that are going on, are not treating the employees well. So how can you expect them to treat the customers well? So this is, again, a significant shift in how people think about organizations. So it says, if you're going to be a good, trustworthy business, you better understand this stuff internally. Now, other data, which I find intriguing too, is what is it that I, as an employee, look at that would make me trust a business leader? Now, look at this stuff. So it says, okay, well, if I look on the left, do I trust business leaders based on integrity, benevolence, or competence? And integrity is quite important, isn't it? Integrity is, do I say what I, you know, do I act in accordance to what I say? And integrity, interestingly, is the most common value statement of organizations. And I sort of sometimes think, do you even need to say it? Isn't that just a given? But apparently it's not. And of course it's important. But look at these other things, benevolence and competence. You know, benevolence, to put it in the vernacular, if my boss gives a crap about me, then I'm more likely to trust them. Equally, the competence thing, well, I sort of, rightly or wrongly, assume they're going to be reasonably competent. So that's not the more important thing. The more important thing is integrity and how they behave, and benevolence in terms of how they look after me. And that is reflected on the factors that drive trust, which is, interestingly, that the most trusted leaders are the ones which are highest on things like integrity and benevolence. So we're now talking about things like compassionate management. I even hear organizations talk about love, hopefully with a small L and not in any kind of inappropriate way. But talking about how we need to care for our employees, and isn't that an essential element of good business? To care for your people, your duty of care as an employer. But that is not what we've always been doing. And if I go back to the CIBD in terms of our own history, 100 years old. In fact, I've been CEO for 7 years, and my first year was the 100th anniversary of the CIBD. We started as the Welfare Workers Association. And they did what it said on the tin. And they were for companies like Roundtree, Lever Brothers, which now calls Unilever, Cadbury's, the old Quaker businesses. And I don't know if any of you have been to places like Port Sunlight or Bourneville. I mean, they really did take it to the extreme. They housed their employees. They gave them hospitals and schools and all sorts of things. And as I said, we lost sight of so much of that stuff in the intervening years. So that's, I think, really interesting. It's trust is not just about how good are you as a leader. Trust is about how you behave and about how you look after your people and do you care. So it really is saying so much of, I think, what is the imperative in business and what is shifting in our thinking is back to the centrality of the idea of people. And when I talk about HR, I say it's about putting the human back into human resources. Because if we're honest, in many of our functions, including HR, I think we even lost sight of the human there. There was lots of policies and lots of rules, and the way to control behavior is to write more rules. And now we're saying, well, hold on a second, let's strip away the rules, because if I write lots of rules, what does it tell my people? Does it tell them I trust them? No, of course not. The more rules I write, the less I'm telling my people that I trust them. And empowerment is about trust. So stripping away rules, so we're having companies I'm seeing now zero-basing all their policies. Or companies that are describing themselves as holocracies, the democracies at work, stuff like that. Very radically different thinking from what we saw in the last decades or so. So all these sorts of things, idea of recognition, inclusion, purpose, fairness, work-life integration, compassion, these are all the subjects now at the front of the agenda, and thank goodness they are. And they do play out, therefore, to a couple of really key thoughts. One is that I think and to go back to the CIPD's own history, is that of welfare workers, is I profoundly believe in the future of work that one of the most important things we have to focus on now is people's well-being as an outcome of good work, as an outcome of good workplaces, as an outcome of good management. Because we know that the data on our things like stress, we do a lot of research on this, stress is the biggest source of absence at work. We know that 1 in 4 people are suffering from mental health. So we know, or suffering, it's the wrong word, there are somewhere we're all on a spectrum of mental health, but they have recognized and diagnosable mental health symptoms. So these are things that should become much more front and center, the ideas of mental health and physical health and even things like financial well-being, even things like cyber well-being. Am I protecting myself? Do I know how to do those things? And that has to be an outcome of the future work. And we've got to decide within all of that, how are we building the right capabilities? And don't you think it would be cool if we all walked around with a badge on our back saying, how's my managing? And incidentally, if you think, no, it's okay, I'll cover that badge up, younger generations, they don't care whether you've got a badge on your back or not. They're going to come and tell you, right? You notice that? And if they don't come and tell you, they come and tell somebody else, or they might even write it on glass door, who knows? So this is the world that we live in. And it is an opportunity for us to really, I think, revisit a lot of the paradigms of work, recognizing we are living in a much more uncertain times, but it puts a lot more pressure on the leaders and managers, and we need to train them better to do this stuff. We're going to train them how to manage people effectively. We're going to train them how to manage and engage much more diverse workforces. We're going to train them to understand how to treat and manage fairly between people who are working part-time versus full-time or remotely versus in front of me every day, all those sorts of dynamics of work. And they are absolutely essential to our future. So in the end, it is a lot of this sort of stuff. Focusing on a VUCA world, it says, all right, let's understand our leadership, let's understand our culture. Let's understand that things like the employee value proposition is the mirror image of a customer value proposition, which is why we talk about employees first, customers second. You're getting those two things in balance. You can't have a fantastic customer value proposition set up, well, we care for our customers, if I'm not also caring for my employees. So this is a very exciting time, I think, in terms of some of the shifts that I'm seeing and the pressure for businesses to step up and demonstrate that they can act responsibly. And it really does start from within. And as you start it from within, then you start to expose it externally. And if you don't expose it externally in terms of how you're looking after people, how you're understanding culture, how you're changing those things, we're going to be forced to more and more. And I, for one, would much rather that we as business people and you as your profession encourage businesses to do this because it's the right thing to be more transparent and to be more open. Because if we don't, I think we're going to be forced to. So thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this CIPR podcast. For more from the CIPR National Conference 2019 and other great podcast resources, visit cipr.co.uk.